It's the boss.
I call shot like a boss.
And the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
From the SportsMap Radio Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine.
Welcome back, SportsMap Radio. And now joining us in studio.
The man, the myth, the legend.
Yes, he is. I call him the Swami. But he knows all things about all things. His name is Patrick Creighton. He's a show host on KFNC Houston. Patrick, welcome in.
This guy sounds awesome. Can I meet him?
Yeah. You're the real deal.
How are you guys?
Good to see you. You're here. This is so great.
Well, first time I've been on with you guys in a while.
It's been too long.
Everyone in Houston is better now after C.J. Stroud's performance yesterday. What did you see in C.J. Stroud?
Well, it's because I'm going to take this moment to self-high-five and pat myself on the back as the one person in Houston who had been calling for C.J. Stroud to be the best quarterback in the draft since of last year.
David Gao, tell Patrick.
Were you also on the bandwagon?
No, I'm going to tell you that I was very unsure. I was worried about that S2 cognitive test, but there is this young woman sitting next to me who said C.J. Stroud is the guy. She wanted him for the Texans, and she was delighted when he went number 2 to the Texans.
That's why you and I get along so well, Carla.
That's it. It's mano a mano, Patrick. It was the first game of Ohio State season in September. I saw him play, and I think it was against Penn State, and it was a tight one. And I saw his post-game interview. I looked at my husband. I said, that's the guy. That's him.
He was always the most accurate quarterback coming out of the draft.
Yep.
And if you got away from the Bryce Young played at Alabama narrative.
Yes.
Totally.
C.J. Stroud was easily the best quarterback in college football last year. The footwork, the arm strength, the ability to make throws at all three levels, the ability to know when to put touch on the ball and when to put mustard on the ball. He is the full package. And you saw all of that yesterday in a matchup almost designed for him because the Bucs are very good against the run. The Texans can't run the ball to save their lives. CJ is excellent against the blitz. They have to blitz to get pressure because they don't get home with 4.
And they didn't blitz enough.
Well, actually, they stopped blitzing because he was torching them. So as the game went on, the Bucs changed the defensive game plan. They stopped blitzing so much because he was killing them. So they started dropping more guys into coverage. But his ability, and you heard about him in the postgame. He said, I knew my guy was going to run the route. My job was to take care of the safety and then make the throw. And that is literally the game-winning touchdown to Tank Dell. He looks off the safety and just throws a BB straight to the back.
Beautiful
of the end zone
pass.
For Tank Dell.
It was 6 seconds on the clock. Let's just go there, too. That was amazing. I mean, it was lightning
rod. I cannot recall at any time in now the 11 seasons that I've been covering the Texans a game-winning drive in 40 seconds executed the way C.J. Stroud executed that drive. I don't know
yards.
That it's ever happened in that manner.
Not for the Texans, no.
No, I don't think so.
It was an historic thing. It was an incredible drive.
In fact, I
will
tell you,
by a rookie of all things.
I think the last time they really had a wow last second scoring drive.
Was it Deshaun Watson in the overtime with the Bills?
Oh, no, you got to go even further back than that. Like, we only have this little bit amount of time and we need to score. You got to go all the way back to game 2, 2013. Matt Schaub hit a rookie, DeAndre Hopkins, down the sideline against the Tennessee Titans at the very end of the fourth quarter. The next day, Boomer Esiason did on his Sports Minute, Matt Schaub is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. How can you doubt this guy? They didn't win another game the rest of the year.
Oops. Well, hopefully that will not be the case this time. Let me ask you this. Do you think the Texans are now playoff contenders? Can you see they're sitting there at 4-4 in the division? They're behind the Jaguars, who are 6-2. Do you think they can put it all together? Can they build on this win yesterday?
Now, do I think that they are playoff contenders, meaning can they make the postseason? Yes, they can make the postseason because the AFC is very top-heavy.
Yeah.
Kansas City is great.
They're going to see Cincinnati.
Now that the Bengals have Joe Burrow back to being Joe Burrow, they are a top team.
They're scary.
That's where the Texans are next week.
Yeah, next week they face
Baltimore Ravens are a terrific team because they have one of the top 4 quarterbacks in the NFL in Lamar Jackson.
And a defense that's fierce.
After that, every team has warts. Every team has warts. And really, after those three guys, you look at Josh Allen, who I think is a very overrated quarterback.
Thank you. Me too.
Justin Herbert, very overrated quarterback. I think Tua is very good in the system he is in, but he is very much playing to the fact that they have insane speed at the skill position players, and they can't beat anybody who's any good.
Yep. They're bullies. They get the weak guys.
Once you get past those top three guys in the AFC, what other quarterback are you looking at and say, that guy's way better than C.J. Stroud? The Texans' schedule going forward is the Bengals this week and a bunch of teams they could beat. Because it is a soft schedule, because they finished second. They finished third in the division. No, they finished last in the division. They were dead last. They were
currently they're second behind Jacksonville right now.
And now they're in second place, but they have that last place schedule. And their strength of victory, meaning the records of the teams they have beaten this year, is the best in the AFC by a lot.
You're kidding.
It's almost 580.
Because they beat Jacksonville, they beat New Orleans, they beat Pittsburgh, they beat...
Their strength of victory is the best in the AFC. Miami's happens to be the worst in the AFC.
Right.
But this is a team that, as they evolve, and look at the evolution from one week to the next, right? Against Carolina, they wanted to run the ball no matter what. They ran the ball more than they passed it. They were constantly behind the chains, third and long, and... Ultimately, they paid for it because they took the ball out of the hands of C.J. Stroud. This week, they dropped back 45 times. They ran it 17 times, and they put up 39 points on a pretty good defense.
Yeah,
I think they are coming to understand the offense works by throwing the ball with C.J. Stroud and running the ball just enough to keep the defense honest, not the other way around. And if they can do that against Tampa Bay, there's a lot of teams coming up on their schedule they can hang some 30 burgers on.
Wow. We're not used to this talk in Houston.
It's, it's been a minute.
Very
right?
exciting. It's been
in
a minute.
Your overall assessment of the AFC, one team you left out was the Jaguars, Trevor Lawrence. And we were talking about, do we think Trevor Lawrence in this stage of his development, clearly he's a talented quarterback, but in this development stage, is he a guy who can lead the Jaguars deep into the playoffs?
I think that's a question that still needs to be answered.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is on Trevor Lawrence because he's had some games that you look and go, all right, what are we doing here? I mean, even the playoffs last year, when he threw three interceptions in the first half, then they come back to win. He has immense talent. I don't know how great the talent is around him, and I question their offensive line. Their defense can be hit.
They've got a lot of injuries. They're doing a lot of patch and play there.
I don't know. I mean, look, the fact that his rookie year was a complete waste because of Urban Meyer. And then they had to bring in Doug Peterson. They changed the entire system, which has been better for him. But they don't – I don't think they have a real bell cow running back.
You don't think Etienne
I think Etienne
is
a good back, but I don't. He's not Derrick Henry type. He's not Saquon Barkley type. I do think that they're still trying to figure out because Calvin Ridley is a really good receiver. But
they don't use
there's
them
games
as much.
That they don't get him the ball
it's
as
so
much
true.
As they should. And I don't know why that is. I mean, we know Doug Peterson's a Super Bowl winning coach. So why do the Jaguars one week look awful and the next week look terrific? And that inconsistency to me is why I don't think they're ready to take that. Are they the best overall team in the AFC South? Yes. Oof. But they're not near the level of the Chiefs, of a healthy Bengals, probably not even a Bills.
And certainly
really?
Not the Ravens.
Definitely not the Ravens.
Okay, interesting. I like that. And I do agree with you there. There's not enough consistency. Let me ask you something about Las Vegas. They've had quite a week. Fired their cleaned house. Thank God. McDaniel's gone. Ziegler gone. The OC gone. I mean, obviously, do I think this season is going to rectify itself? No, I do not. What I want to ask you about this, What do you think about Antonio Pierce? Do you think, I mean, obviously he did a fantastic job yesterday, and I'm not talking about beating the Giants. I could probably beat the Giants, especially given what happened yesterday. With
without trying.
Yeah, without
trying. In heels.
It's so true.
While carrying a plate of brownies.
I'm betting on that later. Why is that? I mean, I don't understand why we're talking about her walking around in heels with a plate of brownies, but I love the sound of it.
Anyway, back to the good stuff. So, okay, so my daughter was at the game yesterday. In pregame warmups, Patrick, Mark Davis came in and took, you know, walked onto the field. Raider Nation, thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mark. Okay, so this is how badly they've all hated the regime, and clearly the players felt the same because they had a meeting with Josh McDaniels where they told him so. Given all this, do you like the change in Las Vegas? And ultimately, what is going to happen with Davante Adams?
Number one, I want to be so rich that I can throw away $85 million like it's nothing and just
say, Papa
made
Al.
A mistake, whatever.
Isn't that amazing that he did that? I mean, Mark Davis.
That tells you how he profitable wants, Raider Nation is.
Well, he wants to win.
Oh, yeah, he
and he's willing to
finally
fire a coach with a whole lot of years and money on that contract.
Antonio Pierce was a terrific linebacker. He was a team captain. He was a leader.
Super Bowl winner. Thing.
You know, I saw him a lot with the Giants. He is like how we have D'Amico Ryans here in Houston. He's that kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And
he's a player's coach.
To say, hey, did the Raiders finally get it right? Because why anybody would have hired Josh McDaniels?
Thank you.
After, A, he flopped so badly in Denver and then left the
Colts at the
altar after they hired assistants he asked them to hire. Made no sense. He wrote a big check to right the wrong, but it looks like he's going to get it right this time.
Okay, can we come back on Davante Adams?
Absolutely.
Okay, I want to know what's happening.
All right, we're going to find out the fate of Davante Adams when we return here on Sports Map Radio.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And we have the Boss and the Gloss. And in studio with us is Patrick Creighton. He's a show host on KFNC Houston. You can find him there. Patrick, great to have you. And when we went to break, we were talking about the fate of Davante Adams. Because of now, of course, the Raiders have all these changes going on. Davante Adams is a guy who probably should have been traded at the trade deadline where the Raiders could get some capital and position themselves for next year. What about the fate of Davante Adams? Do you think that he's a guy who will be back with the Raiders next year?
I think Davante Adams is getting traded in the offseason, mm-hmm. and I think he'll be traded before the draft so they can get draft picks to use on his replacement in the draft.
Yeah.
Adam should have been traded at the deadline. I mean,
I
the Jets went all in on Davante Adams, but the now fired general manager wouldn't take the.
You mean the Raiders?
The now fired. Well, the Jets went after Davante Adams, but the Raiders then GM would not pull the trigger. He then gets fired the next day. So,
Dave Ziegler. Yes.
Why is Jimmy Garoppolo still on the Raiders? Why is Davante Adams still on the Raiders? Why didn't they cash in their chips and get picks? And I think because Mark Davis made these decisions after the trade deadline. When they go into the offseason, there's going to be a lot of restructuring. And one of those is going to be Davante Adams is going to be on another team. And I don't think he's going to get a Tyreek Hill haul. You know, he kind of got that when the Raiders paid for
$85
him.
$85 million.
They gave him, you know, what the first, a second.
Yep.
I mean, they gave up a lot of draft capital to get him. I think they're going to try to recoup some of that capital. You're not going to get all of it. But I do think that he will be on another team next year. I mean, look, Mark Davis made these changes. He understands the dynamic he's in. There is so much competition for your entertainment dollar in Las Vegas. If you are not putting out a high-end product, people are not going to show. And you're about to have a baseball team come into your market very soon. Even though right now they're not very good, they're going to be bright and shiny with a brand new stadium, and that will carry you for a year until they rebuild that organization and how good they are when they first start playing there. Well, they might be better than they were this year. You have to compete with those dollars.
I think you can only get better from after
right?
this year.
You've got the Knights, who are an excellent draw. They're the first professional team in Vegas. They pack the house every night. They've won a Stanley Cup.
They've been to two back-to-back championships.
Your WNBA team is terrific. you are the with all the casinos and the gambling and the shows.
Now.
There is so much entertainment. If you don't have a high end product, people are going to spend their dollars elsewhere. He's aware of this. Mark Davis might not be the richest owner in the NFL, but he's very shrewd. He understands his market. He knows it can be a powerhouse market, but he also knows he's got to win.
Okay, I love it because, you know, it gives me cause to pause. But this week changed it for me when he did this. When I look at that haircut and I think someone decides to have that haircut,
hey.
I can't trust his decisions. But you know what? I'm all about Prince Valiant this week because I'm so proud of him. As a Cradle Raiders fan, this is what needs to happen. David knows I was rooting against the Raiders on Monday Night Football because I said they need to lose so that Ziegler and McDaniels are gone.
Yeah, Carla.
I got my wish.
This morning, before I put my lovely Texans hat on.
Which looks very fine on you,
Patrick. I looked at my hair in the mirror and I said, wow, this hairstyle was rocking in 1981. And I took
it's got a little Mark Davis to it.
No, not that kind.
Not that kind.
It's kind of like at a Goodfellas with just a straight up Italian style hair. Yeah, I took a picture of it. And I sent it to my wife and she laughed her tail off. So later on, when you want absolute comedy, I will show you. I'm not going to send it to you, but I will show you that picture so that you may laugh for 5 minutes.
Okay, well, I'll take it.
I'm sitting in between you two and I see Beauty and the Beast is all I can tell you.
A Beast would be an upgrade for me. And let's be real.
Are you just talking about me? You're the Beauty.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
We're going to keep it that
way. I don't know in what alternate universe that happens to fit in, but that's probably the one where Superman wears green.
Always bringing the sunshine, Patrick. I love it. Okay, let me ask you a little bit about our A.J. Brown here. Obviously, he's having an incredible season. He's keeping the Philadelphia Eagles afloat along with many. I mean, they've got everything looks good with the Eagles except their secondary, defensive secondary. What in the world was Tennessee thinking when they traded him?
They were thinking
what?
They were going to have very short arms in their deep pockets. And they thought, oh, we don't need to have this star receiver. We could probably replace him. They did not recognize or value the incredible talent that A.J. Brown is. And last year, they realized their season got tanked because they couldn't replace him. This year, they tried to replace him with DeAndre Hopkins, but they had a different problem. Ryan Tannehill stinks.
Hello?
And Malik Willis also stinks. Will Levis might be their quarterback of the future, but, and look, he had a great first game.
Yeah, he did.
Not so great second game. Teams are going to be able to scheme for him. They don't have a great offensive line anymore, and they haven't for a little while. Derrick Henry's been playing banged up.
Should they have traded Derrick Henry at the trade deadline?
They should have traded him in the offseason. But I don't think they know who they are right now. Because you look, you took Will Levis for a reason. You know you need to upgrade a quarterback. Ryan Tannehill, outside of that 1 year that he had there where he was terrific, he's always hurt. And that
and
was
you
the
knew
knock
that
on
from
him.
Miami.
That was the knock on him before he ever got there. Yep. He's always hurt. And here he is again, hurt. And when he's not hurt, well, some days he's good and some days he's not. Yeah, look, when Derrick Henry was running over everybody and you could play action teams to death, sure, Ryan Tannehill's got open receivers to look at. When you can't do that, he's just not that good. And reality, they should have turned the offense over to Will Levis at the start of the season and made trades to rebuild, not, well, we're going to go half for it, and like half rebuild, and that's why they're in the middle of nowhere because they tried to go halfsies. You got to commit one way or the other. They couldn't, and now they're stuck.
Yep, that's a great assessment. Does it concern you at all that Will Levis, at least pre-draft, was more concerned about his own gun show than about anything else that he could do with the football?
Look, anybody who puts mayonnaise in their coffee has serious mental issues. And should probably be committed, told to go stand in the corner of a round rubber room and locked in there until he could find his way out. Look, mayonnaise is disgusting.
I agree, and I know that
in Texas, people like mayonnaise. Mayonnaise is like pure unadulterated fat in gelatin form. It's gross. Mm. It's gross to look at. It's gross to touch. I'm sure as hell not eating it.
It doesn't hold up in the heat very well either.
Oh, no.
And the coffee is hot.
Put it on everything. They mix it with cheese.
Yeah.
Ew.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Man. You want to find a way to ruin something, put mayo on it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, right. I am definitely out on anything like that. But reality, Will Levis has talent.
He does.
He's got
talent.
A big arm. He's mobile. He turns the ball over a little too much. Maybe you can coach that out of him. But they really should have – this season should have been all about let's build up Will Levis. Let's retool this team. Let's be ready to compete in 2 years. Let's get everything around him the same way the Colts were ultimately going to do that around Anthony Richardson before he got injured, the same way the Texans are doing around C.J. Stroud, the same way the Panthers are doing around Bryce Young. That should have been the move. Titans as an organization messed that up. But – do we really feel bad for the Titans?
No.
No. No, we don't.
No, we're sitting here in Houston. We don't.
Okay, well, let me ask you about Bryce Young. You mentioned him. Because right now, if you were sitting in Carolina, it would be tough to watch C.J. Stroud play so well. But even worse, it'd be tough to watch Bryce Young play the way he is. He had two pick sixes yesterday and a third interception. When do you start to get concerned about Bryce Young's ability to play at the NFL level?
Or did you not stop being concerned?
I'm not going to worry about Bryce Young this year. That's a bad football team. They don't have a good line. They don't have a good defense. They really, like, their Super Bowl was against the Texans.
Yes, it was.
Everything, that team ramped its play up as hard as they could because they wanted to spare their rookie quarterback from, oh, should have taken the other guy. They wanted to spare him from that. And, of course, the Texans' offensive philosophy in that game was certainly questionable. But the Texans learned from that. The Panthers did not. And I don't think there are enough pieces around him in any way, shape, or form to look at Bryce Young and say, well, we got to make a decision on him. He can't do this or he can't do that. I don't think they have the players around him to help elevate him. Adam Thielen is 147 years old. He's their best receiver. They don't really have a running game. You know, they signed Miles Sanders. He's been awful. They don't have a great offensive line. The defense has been suspect.
Do you like Frank Reich as their head guy? I don't know.
I liked Frank Reich in Indianapolis.
Me too.
Early on. And then as the years kind of went on, it's almost like his value started to go down.
He got stale.
And I'm wondering if he hasn't put together the right scheme yet. I mean, he just handed off the offensive play calling duties to his OC, who's a first-time play caller, whereas the Texans, Bobby Slowick, first-time play caller, he's had it from day one. How much did that hinder the offensive coordinator's growth? How much did that hinder Bryce Young's growth? I think those are questions we're not going to learn for another year, but I do think they are legitimate questions.
All right, when we come back, it was a big weekend in college football. We're going to look at the new rankings that have come out or what we can expect and the fate of USC. We're going to look at what's happened there. All that and more here when we return on Sports Map Radio.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. And I've got Patrick Creighton, show host on KFNC Houston, to my left. I got Carla, the Gloss, to my right.
It's getting steamy in here.
Yeah, listen, when they went to break, they were going after it on a variety of topics. I said, you have to save that for the air. But let me say one thing to tee this up, because, Patrick, you've got to understand, a week ago, we were sitting here, and Carla basically said she had two wishes in life. One was that Josh McDaniels and David Ziegler would get fired from the Raiders.
Into the sun.
In fact, she said she was rooting for a loss going into last week's game.
Monday Night Football.
So that
we got it.
Josh McDaniels would get fired. And lo and behold, he got fired. Her other wish had to do with USC football. She was noting they were a prolific offense, but a very porous defense. And she wanted Alex Grinch to be fired. And she made an impassioned case for why Alex Grinch deserved to be fired. You've gotten your wish on both accounts. Grinch is gone.
I'm getting Christmas in November.
She came in with a bounce in her step, a little flush and happy today. She's a new woman.
Well, I'm happy for the Raiders.
Yes.
I'm not happy for USC because this is 2 years too late. When Lincoln Riley got hired at USC, and he elected to bring the Grinch who stole everything Christmas, a national championship, good rankings. He brought Alex Grinch with him. I'm shaking my head because we are here in Big 12 country, and there is no defense being played. But he brings him to USC. They have Caleb Williams, Heisman-winning season. He looks fantastic. They get to the Pac-12 championship game. The USC defense, which had been going downhill all season, gives up 47 to Utah. Turns around, gives up, costs them the Pac-12 championship. Gives up 47 to Tulane in the Cotton Bowl. Now, Tulane is good, but Tulane is Tulane, and this is USC football. Lincoln Riley doubles down, brings back Alex Grinch. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. It was bad enough you brought him with you, and now you're doubling down and keeping him. And we have now seen they got beat 52-42 by Washington. This is their third straight loss. They have been annihilated by teams. The only team that they've won in the last four games is Cal by one. They are ruining Caleb Williams' season. And to me, this is on Lincoln Riley. And I thought it was interesting in the firing notice that went out to the media, it was USC and Lincoln Riley fire Alex Grinch. To me, that's a CYA move to say to the boosters, Lincoln's not getting his way.
Do you think there was sort of an intervention or the AD stepped in and said, Lincoln, we're not going to tolerate this. You've got to get rid of your guy. Or did Lincoln proactively do it himself?
Oh, he did not proactively do it. No way.
There's some kind of connection or loyalty between those two that would have led Lincoln to keep or to bring him over and then keep him all this time.
I mean, I think it's either Lincoln Riley's pride, his arrogance, or Alex Grinch has tape on him. I don't know what happened here, but I think USC, they finally have an AD. They've gone through several. Pat Hayden, long time, then Lynn Swann. They finally have a good AD, the guy that came from Cincinnati. And they said, this is enough. They've ruined Caleb Williams' season. They've ruined any chance. They're probably not even going to make a bowl game. They have to really win out, and they've got Oregon coming up. When I saw Caleb Williams jump into the stands and cry and hug on his mom, I said, this is enough. So I'm furious with Lincoln Riley. I, you know how I feel. This has just been, when you have the running back for Washington put up 280 yards on the Trojan, 280 yards himself.
With a lot of poor tackling.
Really effortless tackling. And here's the last thing I'm going to say, and then Patrick, I really do want to hear what you're saying. It's not that USC doesn't have the personnel. They used the transfer portal brilliantly, and they really used it this offseason to really shore up the defense. It's lack of effort. It's terrible scheming. It's like really looks like I could tackle harder. They miss tackles. They kind of put an arm out. That's on coaching. And I'm furious. And it's too late. Too little, too late at this point. And you've ruined Caleb Williams' season and USC's chances in the playoffs.
Are you concerned about Caleb Williams' maybe mental makeup? And I ask from this point of view, right? So he obviously came with Lincoln Riley, right? He was the guy who took over at quarterback in Lincoln Riley's final year of coaching at OU. Spencer Rattler, who was supposed to be
– He was started, actually.
A big-time
he was
quarterback.
A five-star recruit.
You
they
loved
were
him
all
too,
excited
David.
To have him. Yes, he had a lot of mojo to him, but they benched him for Caleb.
Yeah, and now he's out in the ACC somewhere, the All-Cupcake Conference. And So Caleb Williams takes over. He plays really well. Last year, Caleb Williams – 42 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. It was a great season. But we start to see more of him. And look, when you play in the Pac-12, where, as Carl said, they do actually play defense in the Pac-12. It's not just straight up, 7-on-7, the hell with linebackers. It matters to play defense.
And interestingly, Patrick, just quickly, once they break up the Pac-12, they show up. Look how hard everyone's playing. They're beating each other up. I mean, it's the best Pac-12 I've seen in years. Keep going.
It is. It's terrific Pac-12 this year, or Pac-2, whatever we want to call
Pac-2
it.
Pac-2 now. Mm-hmm. Pack your bags is what I call it.
The things that we've learned about Caleb Williams this year, like the painting of the fingernails and the crying.
He did that last year.
I know. But like he paints his fingernails and the crying after he made fun of Max Duggan for crying last year. Now he's crying. And, my mom and the puppy. And it's like, we're getting a little too into like the reality TV TikTok stuff here than we are into football. And is that an immaturity thing in your opinion? Because I feel like that is an immaturity thing to me. If you're willing to put all that out there as an athlete, you should never be putting that much out there about yourself, and certainly not vulnerable when you're the quarterback. You are the captain. The captain is never vulnerable. When the captain is vulnerable, everybody underneath you, they start thinking maybe you're not the guy. And look, he's still a terrific talent, and he's got probably a really great future. I hope a great future ahead of him the NFL. But I think he's a little growing up to do.
Well, I don't disagree with you because he's a 21-year-old young man. I'm going to give him that, young man, with a lot of pressure on him and in a big-time program. I mean, we all know that college football is at its best when Notre Dame, UT, USC, and Alabama are all hitting on all cylinders. Those are like the big dogs. But here's what I would say about Caleb Williams. What are most 21-year-old boys doing right now? They're on sticky floors of frat houses, waking up with strange girls, you know, whatever.
Chasing girls.
Totally. And I think, you know, I think that I know what he paints on the fingernails. I've seen it. It's profanities against the team he's playing. If that's what he uses to fire him up, okay, I'm good with it.
And let me just pause on that. You're not opposed to painted fingernails.
No, I've got some crazy ones.
They look beautiful, by the way.
Not with bad language. They're G-rated.
Keep going.
But this thing with the mom, it really it pulled on me and what it said, because I've been watching his post-game reactions, like in Utah. He just sat on that bench. It says to me, he loves the game of football so much, and I would take a little something of what Giselle said. Caleb cannot do more than Caleb is doing, okay? But the USC defense over the past six games has given up 41, 41, 48, 34, 49, and 52 points. Caleb Williams cannot throw the ball, hand off the ball, defend passes, intercept balls. He can't do it all. And I think he is seeing, I could be a Heisman Trophy winner again. I could lead my team to the playoffs. And I'm watching this crumble around me.
Yeah, that ship has sailed. That's just not going to happen this year now.
He may not be a good leader. I don't know.
Look, they're going to go to a bowl game. Now that
I don't know, though, Patrick. Well,
they got seven wins. They're going to go. They're bowl eligible. I just don't. It might not be the Rose Bowl.
Right.
You know,
it won't be.
That's really the big deal. Is it's not going to be the Rose Bowl. If you're not going to be in the CFP, it's got to be the Rose Bowl. And I don't think it's going to be that
might
either.
Be like the
and they're
going
to play Oregon this week. And they're probably going to give up at least another 40 points.
Yep.
Because they could score, but they can also play some D. And, you know, Oregon's and Washington, I think, are going to wind up meeting in the Pac-12 title game for a chance to go to the CFP.
And, I do too.
And that's those are two legitimate contending type teams, and USC's a notch below those guys.
Well, what do you think of Lincoln Riley? Why do you think he hung on to Alex Grinch for so long?
I think guys, when they move to new places, they want people who they know, they trust, who they know will be loyal, that they're going to fall in line, they're going to push whatever my agenda is. And he obviously trusted him that whatever I say, he's not going to go against me. He's going to just put out and do whatever I tell him to do. Now, maybe he wasn't this situation isn't going to work out for him, but he knew that he could trust him to not be a contrasting influence. He was going to toe the party line. And most guys, when they get their first job, they hire people they know. And it's who they know with the team they just came from, who, you know, hey, if I was the defensive coordinator on Team X and I need to bring, well, maybe I'll bring the guy who was the quarterback's coach and make him the offensive coordinator here. Or in college, this guy was my offensive coordinator under me at this school. I'm going to bring him with me. He already knows my system. He's going to help me implement this faster. It's a familiarity type of thing.
All right, when we come back, we're going to look at the top of the college football rankings to see what we learned from last weekend. That up next here on Sports Map Radio.
Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And Carla, I need to tell you that I do learn things from you.
Aw, yeah. You never said that before.
Well, remember a couple weeks ago, you'd been out hip-hop dancing in that crazy, over-the-top, rabid way that you do, and you got all kinds of soreness in your knees and your arms and all that, and there was only one solution for your soreness.
I told you about my Capsiva.
Capsiva was the answer. Well, I moved my youngest into his new place in Austin, and in moving all those things, I got a little stiff, I got a little sore, so I went out and got some Capsiva. And let me say, I know a lot of people have tried a lot of pain relief creams, and most of them barely work, if at all. But Capsiva, it works. I found it. I found it from you, and I'm so grateful. It's a scientific breakthrough in joint pain relief. It captures the medicinal power of capsaicin, and it eliminates all the pain with no burn and smell. It's amazing.
Okay, and the best thing about it, you don't have to wait for it to work. It happens right away.
Yeah.
You cannot smell someone coming like you can with some of the other ones that have that menthol smell.
That little, oh, yeah.
And it works. And it's homeopathic, all natural ingredients.
Well, I appreciate you telling me about it.
I'm glad it worked for you.
So we're going to tell everybody about it. Stop living in pain. Get Capsiva now. You can find it at Meijer's. You can find it at Kroger Pharmacy and select CVS stores.
And 100% money back guarantee. Even if you use the whole thing and say it didn't work, you get it back, but you're going to love it. You're not going to want it back.
I'm sold.
All righty.
All righty. College football. Top of the rankings now. We have a picture of, well, who everybody thinks is elite. I mean, Ohio State's right up there, Georgia, Michigan, FSU. Those teams are pretty special. Are you comfortable with them as the top four?
I don't think Georgia is getting all the way this year because I don't think their quarterback is good enough. You know, they are still the SEC East is still the weaker side of the SEC.
Yep.
And look at the way Alabama's playing right now. They just handled Tennessee, and then they handled LSU. They finally, I think, figured out the blend on offense to maximize the talent of Jalen Milroe. I've been covering Jalen Milroe since
freshman. I think it was his breakout game.
Jalen Milroe went to school right here in the Houston area. He went to the same high school my son did at Katy Tompkins. I called nearly every single one of his games his entire high school career.
Hmm.
So I've seen him for a long time, and you still are not seeing how fully talented he is yet. The kid is athletic off the charts. He's got a power arm. He can make any throw. But his elusiveness as a runner combined with the fact that not only is he elusive, but he's very fast, and he can put his shoulder down and bulldoze a guy. He is an incredible, incredible athlete. And I think they're finally figuring out, hey, we don't have the Mac Jones type of, hey, we should stand in the pocket. And Jalen Milroe, that's not his game. He's not just going to stand there and throw the ball.
Is he more a Jalen Hurts type of play?
I think he – not right at this moment. He is not as accurate a quarterback as Jalen Hurts was at the end of his college career. But at some point, he can be. He is a better runner than Jalen Hurts.
Wow.
And they are finally figuring out the blend of how to use Jalen Milroe as a passer and as a runner. And the more they turn him loose, the more dangerous they're going to be. Jalen Milroe, when he is fully unleashed, is going to make the Bulldogs cry.
Well, look
out.
When
they get to that title game, the SEC title game, he's going to make them cry.
Ooh, I'm loving this.
Well, look out, because you know what? Early in the season, there were whispers that this is just not Alabama's year.
People couldn't wait to write off Alabama.
They were written off a bit, but here they sit at 8-1, and you're right. They're going to be in the SEC championship game with a chance to get back into the CFP. It'll be fun to watch.
It will be exciting. Patrick, let me ask you this. Okay, so we talked about the CFP rankings. The first ones came out last Tuesday. Ohio State number one, Georgia number two, Michigan number three, Florida State number four, all 9-0 teams. At the time, they were 8-0 teams. Michigan. I've just got to ask you about Michigan. Not only because of the Connor Stallion, whoever he is, situation with the spine. But let me ask you this, okay? So strength of schedule obviously plays in to the college football player rankings. Clearly, Ohio State has two of the strongest wins of any team, beating number 11 Penn State, who has an 8-1 record, and number 15 Notre Dame, who's 7-3 now. Michigan's strength of schedule is 111. First of all, they jumped ahead of Florida State. What do we make of Michigan? They've got a weak strength of schedule, and they're embroiled in a really messy situation with new allegations and situations coming out daily. Your take on Michigan.
I think we're going to learn everything we can possibly learn about Michigan this Saturday when they play Penn State. We're going to find out, is this going to galvanize them or is this going to be a distraction?
You think Penn State can pull it off?
I have my look.
James Franklin doesn't win the big ones.
Any team coached by James Franklin always has the potential to make you say, coulda, woulda, shoulda, they blew it.
Totally.
But as far as what is their makeup, if they go out and they handle Penn State, this is legitimate top four team. This is a team that can win. If they are so distracted that they are clinging on for dear life, that they are, you know, winning on a last-second field goal, that they're losing to Penn State, then they weren't tough enough to handle everything. Like, if you can't handle, you know, there may have been some dude who was looking at things that were out in wide open that anybody could see, but if you can't handle that, then you can't handle the pressure of the CFP. No chance. So they're going to galvanize or they're going to break. Reality, they might be better than Ohio State because the quarterback's better than the quarterback at Ohio State.
But Ohio State has won some big games.
Ohio State's got some wins.
Ranked opponents.
They've got some wins.
Michigan, not so much. Not yet.
Not yet. They're going to find out this week because this will be the toughest game that they play this year.
Let's come a little closer to home. The Longhorns now, if they could win out, they could get right into the CFP conversation. Do you have confidence that they can do that? We got Sean Mapes, Longhorn grad, listening in here from behind the glass. What's everyone's temperature on the Longhorns now?
Should I go first?
Sure.
I think this game last week against Kansas State, it's probably the best team that they're going to face the rest of the season until they get to the Big 12 title game against Oklahoma State, who I'd say is about similar quality to them.
Yep.
And they're playing with Malik Murphy, their backup quarterback, who came in the first quarter and a half. Awesome. No notes. Look great. Maybe quarterback controversy with Quinn Ewers. Then the last 2.5 quarters happened where he was throwing interceptions to – and they would show the on the game, and there wouldn't be a Texas player in the vicinity of the shot. You'd be like, who is he possibly throwing to? So it's been a mixed bag. It's only been 2 career starts for him. So ultimately, for this team to do what they want to do, which is win the Big 12 – it'll be with Quinn Ewers at quarterback, not Malik Murphy. With that being said, I think the defense was the reason they won the game, and that is something that they can hang their hat on as they go on the road the next 2 weeks in the Big 12, is that Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy and Baron Sorrell, those are the guys that are going to help this team get to where they need to go as Quinn Ewers gets healthy.
You buying the Longhorns the Big 12 champs?
With Quinn Ewers, yes, they got a shot. Without Quinn Ewers, they don't have a shot. Clearly, they're not going to play Arch Manning this year. Once they go to Arch Manning, they're not ongoing from Arch Manning. So they're not going.
And Malik Murphy beat him out in the summer, as it was anyway.
I don't know if that was a beat out or, hey, I know I'm gonna stop my quarterback controversy right now.
Okay.
Because if Arch Manning were playing right now and he played well, I think we all expect he'd play well, you've got a real quarterback controversy. How do I stop that contract? I'm going to look. This might as well just be a redshirt season for Arch Manning. I cannot believe anybody really thinks, after watching Malik Murphy play the last 2 weeks, he's better than Arch Manning. Not no way, not no how. Quinn Ewers is healthy. I think they got a shot to win the Big 12. If he's not, well, UT's really good at disappointing.
Yeah, sadly.
The team that I actually think is the one worth watching the most is Washington. Hmm. They're 9-0. They can sling it.
Gosh, they play defense.
If they can avoid the, oh, hey, we lost to another team in our conference late in the season, which is like the Pac-12 curse.
No, it is.
Everybody who is undefeated always loses to a rival somehow late at the end of the season. That team could legitimately be a CFP team and threat to a title.
They made the CFP under Chris Peterson. I mean, how many years ago was that? They were one of the top four.
It feels like a lifetime ago.
It does. It really does.
I hate to say it, but we're going to have to wrap this up. Patrick, thank you so much for coming in. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have to get you a gift. You know where I'm going to go? I'm going to go to Total Wine & More. Total Wine & More has the lowest prices for over 30 years. and you always find what you love and love what you find. And you can get it at Total Wine & More. Drink responsibly. Be 21, Patrick.
I will try to be 21. Guys, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming.
Great to have you. You've been at the listening to The Boss and the Gloss on